Hi, this is James French.
This is Ted Diamond.
This is The Awareness Connection. This is a podcast where we delve into topics related to mind-body awareness, health, and human development. And today, we're going to be talking about what you've called, Ted, sensory motor awareness. You've just written a book on this topic. It's an entire curriculum. But it's more than a book. We're not here to talk just about the book. We're talking about what you've labeled a practice. So yeah, we can talk about definitions. We can talk about the practice itself, why you wanted to write a curriculum. It's really a lot to talk about today.
Yeah, I think that I was thinking that the topic of, sensory motor awareness as a kind of discipline and the curriculum that attaches to it is really the subject of awareness as it applies to bodily tension and kinesthetic awareness. And typically when we speak about that topic, right, we think in terms of practical methods, and we think of, clinical applications like body work or something a teacher helps us with. And I think there's more to the topic than that, because if you're really going to understand the problem of how to become kinesthetically aware as part of being more mindful in how you do things, then you've really got to articulate a discipline relating to your own conduct, to your own behavior. And that's more like learning how to sing than it is like going to someone who's going to do voice therapy.
Okay. So someone who wants to address, you said tension. So it's like, frustrating pain here and there, shoulder issues, maybe when they're related to like being a musician or if they're, someone who is also looking to address perhaps technical problems related to being, for example, a musician or swinging a tennis racket or, simply being more mindful in how they conduct themselves in space, I think that we can probably say all these things. And so you're saying it's more than, like say you approach this work to address pain, it's more than simply getting help from a bodywork person. Really, in order to address pain, it's something more akin to learning a language, learning an instrument. It's actually like a whole education, whole subject.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I think so.
Okay.
Because when you have a, let's say, a shoulder problem, obviously you think it's a physical problem. You want relief, so you're going to go to someone who can help you with that kind of physical problem and give you relief.
Yeah, physical therapist, like you name it.
Yeah.
All kinds of people around.
Yeah. And the problem with that is that, the problem is, first of all, it's not going to be just physical. We could talk about this a bit.
Okay.
And secondly, it's whatever relief you can get or someone can give you, however skilled they may be, you're ultimately going to have to figure out what you're doing that's harmful. And that means that you're going to have to gain some awareness in yourself. And we don't want to think of it that way because we think it's too difficult. Like, why should I have to learn a set of skills or a discipline related to how I use my body.
Yeah.
When I just want relief, my shoulder to feel better so I can get on with what I'm doing.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's the, there's the brick wall that people run into where they just kind of want someone to work on their shoulder, fix the shoulder and move on.
Yeah.
But then I'd say, there's also the, let's say someone is, perhaps more amenable to the, to learning how to do things differently. Say they have a rotator cuff thing, some sort of nagging rotator cuff problem that they know is related to, say, swinging something or to writing all the time or painting or whatever. It seems like there's a distinction here also between teaching someone how to move correctly or perhaps do that move more efficiently in what you're talking about.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, you know, as you well know, James, I mean, if someone comes to me with a shoulder problem, and that's, assuming it's not a medical issue, that, like a torn rotator cuff.
Right. Not broken, not, yeah.
Yeah. Assuming it's not medically something that requires treatment, but a more of a use-related problem, let's say a musician has developed over time and they need help with how they're using the shoulder. Well, they don't have to be invested in the whole subject of how to use their body better. Maybe they come to me for a number of lessons and I help them in some way and they move on. But that is a little bit too, that alone doesn't address the whole question, because even if the person only comes for short-term help, what is the subject that I'm imparting to them? And how much knowledge do I have to have?
Okay.
Am I just a practitioner that helps them as the receiver of the knowledge? I think there's more to it than that.
Okay.
You know, if someone has a vocal problem and I help them with a short term to help with the voice problem, I don't say on account of that, well, there's no real subject that has to be learned here. There's a really profound subject with the voice. Mm. There's a lot to learn about the voice and how it works. Maybe as an expert, you only work short term with someone, but you need to know about the subject. You're not just the person who's trained in a particular voice therapy and help them, and then they go on their way. You have to know what the subject is, and that's what sensory motor awareness is.
All right. Okay.
Identifying and articulating the subject. And some people, like you and I, study that in depth.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm committed to, and I train people who want to learn it in depth, because I think it's an incredible emergent subject that needs to be understood better.
Okay. Yeah, that's a really good distinction you made. You know, it's less about, well, you know, it's even more about what exactly is the expertise that I'm trying to gain, or, you know, like what's the expertise that you've cultivated? What's the subject that you have to learn about in order to help someone in the way that you can help them? You know,
yeah.
You know, or
what's the subject that you would teach if people came to you to learn in depth?
Right.
You know, and again, as you know, over the years, I've realized that when people come to learn the subject in depth, it's kind of like something like a martial art where,
yeah,
trained to become a teacher, you have to learn, you better have some idea what you're doing. And you know that it's a 10-year study to learn in depth. Mm-hmm. Not everyone who comes to you wants to learn in depth, but there are people who come to you to study in depth, and you need to know quite a lot to train the people who want to know in depth. I mean, there's gradations of skill and expertise, mm-hmm, and knowledge. And mm-hmm, sensory motor awareness kind of embodies that, because there are a lot of people who are really passionate about learning about this and want to know more than just they don't just want to get the relief for a problem. Mm-hmm. They want to be professionals, but they also don't want to just learn a method. They want to know in themselves something about the subject.
All right. Yeah. Yeah.
And as an ongoing study and discipline, you know.
Mm-hmm. And so what do you have to know? You know, I mean, for viewers to know, you know, we've said this before, but I've been training with you, Ted, since 2013. That's when I came to study with you. And I feel like I'm definitely still learning. And I'm still learning what this subject is, what it requires of me. But during my training with you, you covered so many topics. I mean, it was like a barrage of topics. It was, we went into, you know, the greatest hits, human anatomy, of course, including muscular anatomy, skeletal anatomy, vocal anatomy, you know. And then we went into neuroscience. You know, we were learning about the cranial nerves. We were learning about how muscles function, you know, down at like the microscopic level. But then we were also learning about We were learning about bodily systems. We were learning about attention. We were learning about, I could just go on and on.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
series of subjects. Yeah.
Yeah, like a long series. It was something like 2 years straight of material, like new material.
Yeah.
You know, and in addition to learning procedures, and then learning, like for example, hands-on procedures. If you wanted to be a teacher and use your hands with students, that's a whole nother curriculum. So it seems like this is an incredibly rich subject. And I want to know, like, how you've chosen what subjects, what topics that you include in this subject.
Yeah, right. Well, you know, what you're describing is kind of like a master's degree, maybe 2 years of study with a certain amount of coursework and a lot of practical work, you know, and like any field, it demands that. You can't expect to learn a martial art and then a year of extra training to learn teaching skills. So 3 years, and that's roughly the equivalent of like a black belt in a martial art, where you have maybe an intensive 3 years of learning to get a black belt. And then you've got a basic foundation for further study.
Yeah.
You know, I would say, but, yeah, and that I would describe as that's the curriculum. Sensory motor awareness is a curriculum in the book, is a practical study with some theory that could be done over a year and repeated over a second year, supplemented with other topics like anatomy, et cetera. Mm-hmm. That's a 2 year study and another year for the teaching part of it.
Mm-hmm.
So
the practical topics alone, like the practical study alone, is a year-long curriculum.
And then repeated, repetition. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, that black belt distinction, that's something that I learned from what Dave Lowry. And I know that you've mentioned it too, where the black belt, you know, like a lot of people think that a black belt means that you're an expert, but really a black belt it means that you've learned all the basics. And you're familiar with all the basics, and now it's up to you to sort of take it. And you know, going from say a first degree black belt to a second degree black belt is an equivalent journey.
Yeah,
well, it's just as long, it's just as difficult. Where you're basically rehashing everything that you've been given at the foundational level.
Yeah, right. And if you did the black belt, and then you think, you know, it's a very American thing, you know. I've trained, I have a professional certification, I paid a lot of money for it, you know, I invested in it, so now I'm entitled to make money from it. Now you've become too interested in sort of getting something out of it. You need to keep investing in yourself and keep learning in yourself. That's really what's required.
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe if you get to the third degree black belt, mm-hmm. maybe then you're going to be really starting to feel like you're able to help other people, or at some point maybe train teachers beyond that. But you know, it requires that kind of investment. Now, again, it doesn't, not everyone who wants to benefit from the knowledge has to be that invested, but the people who care about it, there's a lot to learn, and it's an incredible, incredible subject. But I would say, you asked, what is the actual subject matter? I think the number one area is an understanding how the musculoskeletal system is designed to work in such a way that you know how it goes wrong and how it could be rectified or restored when it's working wrong, or what I call the PNR system, the postural neuromuscular reflex system.
Yeah.
I think that's a core part of the curriculum that is almost entirely unknown in the world of, let's say, body work or stretching or muscle release or relaxation. All of those things are therapeutic and aimed at, you know, relief or improvement or some kind of, or increase of range of motion or increase in flexibility in the body, without a unifying concept of or understanding of how the body is designed to work.
Mm.
think a core piece of the curriculum for sensory motor awareness is to gain the knowledge of how the body works such that you could understand how it's interfered with and mm-hmm. how to restore the proper working.
Yeah.
And that takes, you know, that again, you could benefit from a teacher's knowledge and gain, and so have some experience of that if you're having a specific problem. Mm-hmm. But to learn in yourself as a discipline, and it can be learned as a discipline, that's at least a year to get that experience and to say, oh, I know how it works, and I'm learning to understand how my body works in activity, mm-hmm. just like a martial artist will learn forms as a basis for self-defense.
Right. Okay. Yeah, that's a topic that we can't go into today, but we have spoken about that topic specifically in other podcasts, and you've written about it specifically. Like, I would say that's Neurodynamics is probably the book that went into that topic specifically. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's the most in depth. Anatomy in Action talks about it, and then in sensory motor awareness, the topic and the book and the curriculum, which we're talking about today, there's a brief explanation of how that system works at the beginning as part of the theory and practice.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So that's foundational. That's the overarching, you know, at least the first stage foundational knowledge. And that's what we're geared toward understanding, you know, how the body works, how it goes awry and how we put it awry. Would you say like,
yeah. And you, and as you know, James, I mean, I think the real initial discovery of this subject comes from F. Matthias Alexander.
Yeah.
Who I think was the very first person who was able to observe human movement closely enough and accurately enough that he could begin to discern an overarching kind of organizational principle in human movement. I think it was a brilliant discovery in his part.
Yeah.
He called that the primary control. He described it as a kind of relationship of the head to the trunk that organizes movement, and not just in humans, but in all vertebrates. In humans, it's a particular upright design. And and he based his method, the Alexander technique, on working with that system, but he didn't go into a great deal of depth about how that worked. That took me 30 years to figure out how is that system actually work, so that you could define what goes wrong with it and how it works properly. And that's what I call the PNR system.
All right. Yeah.
And that's the core part of it, is trying to figure out how that system worked as a concrete system, so you knew really in clear terms how it gets interfered with. And I think it was getting clear about that made me begin to realize that there was a real curriculum and theory that could be articulated here.
I see. Yeah. Yeah. It's hard to overstate how important Alexander's observations were, you know, and then it's also important to note that a lot more needed to be said about it.
Yeah.
A lot more needed to be said. And a lot more descriptions, a lot more theoretical pushing of boundaries, you know, a lot, you know, you've gone into, you know, in other places, lengthening as a principle of muscle function in vertebrates, the necessity of bringing in the concept of tensegrity, et cetera, you know?
Yeah.
And this is, you know, like, these are topics that Alexander didn't go into.
Right.
But yeah, so, and then, you know, the curriculum in the book, you know, I'm looking in the book here, the curriculum in the book, it seems to go into, like, then how does the student work with that? Like, what does the student need to learn how to do in order to bring about, say, the natural functioning of the system? Would you say that's correct? Or, you know, would you want to say something before that?
No, I think that's a good next step. Yeah, and then another, yeah, sort of the next step is the pedagogical procedures, or the use of kinesthetic awareness to restore the system and to and figuring out what that means and how to do it. Mm-hmm. And to do that in such a way that you're not just relying on a teacher. There are teachers could be skilled with their hands and show you how the system works, but that's not sufficient to really learn and master the subject. Mm-hmm. You have to learn skills in yourself. Again, just like going to a voice therapist, they might give you exercises that help you with your voice, but to really understand the voice, you have to be able to, you have to study how you produce sound.
Yeah.
How you breathe, how you focus your voice, how you support the voice. And that is, that involves thinking and awareness. And so a lot of the book is devoted to the procedures that are aimed at bringing about restoring that system and experiencing it and understanding how it works.
Mm. Yeah. And this is what we were kind of getting at last week. You know, with the stages of awareness, like there's something about, you know, you've really got to sort of master your own mind's executive functions. You know, you have to sort of be told about these things. You have to be, you know, have to learn how to pay attention. You have to learn how to watch out for distraction. You have to learn about, you know, a lot of mental skills, and then there's also physical skills. Like there's positions that you can utilize, you know, utilize the semi-supine position, for instance. This is another topic. So mental skills geared toward restoring the PNR system, and then utilizing positions, whether standing or seated or lying down, to help that along.
Yeah, those two ideas to me are really key, because even without speaking about awareness, and you don't have to even invoke that, if learning to use your awareness when you have placed yourself in positions that allow muscles to let go, those two are key elements in the pedagogy, in the learning process.
Okay.
That's just really key, you know. You know, when I first had back trouble and I was 19, mm-hmm. I thought my muscles were tight and I needed to stretch them or release them or let go. And I practiced relaxation and stretching. I got worse because I didn't have a clear idea of how the muscles worked or how the body was organized. And I didn't have a clear idea of how muscles worked in the context of a larger whole. If you mm-hmm. have an idea of how the body is designed to work, and then use your awareness in that context, now muscles can let go in a constructive way. You're not just collapsing or relaxing or spacing out.
Yeah.
So I would say those two things. Kinesthetic awareness used in the context of bodily position is really, really key.
Kinesthetic awareness used in the context of bodily positions. That's excellent.
Yeah.
That's a nice way of saying it. Someone asked, you know, we've got a class that we're giving right now, and you know, I do the weekly review, and someone expressed a little bit of confusion when it came to like kinesthetic awareness, consciousness, awareness. You know, there's all these words that get used, attention. And you just said kinesthetic awareness in the context of positions of mechanical advantage, you know.
Supported. Yeah. And that's, we haven't said mechanical. Yeah. Supported positions. Yeah. So if someone has back trouble, but and they learn, let's say in a dance class, that they should, you know, lie flat on the ground, it's pretty hard for the back muscles to let go if you're lying flat out.
Mm.
If you lie down and place books under your head with your knees up, so that you're now in a more supported position where the spine will not, your legs won't be, if your legs are extended, they're going to pull on your lower back. If your knees are up, now your lower back is not going to be, you know, arching. If your head is supported on books, you're not going to throw your head back as most people would if you're lying flat out.
Mm-hmm.
Now your spine is supported in this position. Mm-hmm. And now just lying in that position, And taking time to be quiet and to pay attention will help the back to start to lengthen. So kinesthetic awareness in the context of a supported position helps muscles to let go. And when muscles let go into length, that's how they're designed to work. You don't want muscles to let go in such a way that you collapse. That's not how the body is designed.
Okay.
So that's a really key part of it. And then knowing how to do that in various ways that you could apply to activity, like sitting.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, those are two of the most important things I've ever learned. I mean, to know how to sit in such a way that my spine and my back muscles could lengthen.
Yeah.
The game changer.
Yeah, being able to use a seated position, being able to use, you know, a decent chair in order to bring about these changes.
Yeah.
You know, in order to bring about this like restoration. Yeah.
Yeah. You could do awareness exercises or stretching or have people do body work. You could do that for 28 years and still have no idea how to sit in a balanced way.
Yeah.
And yet, if you look at a typical 2-year-old, the back, they're able to sit completely effortlessly for an hour using their arms in front of them. No adult can do that. I mean, just not unheard of. Could do that, sit for an hour comfortably using their whole back naturally and effortlessly, because that's how the system is meant to work with the spine.
Yeah.
And that can be restored in an adult.
Yeah.
But it has to be done at a more deliberate, conscious level.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, because we've cocked it up. And so, you know, we have to restore that functioning. And the curriculum here is based, the curriculum here is, okay, you want me to restore this. I want to restore this. How exactly do I do that? You know, what do I have to do? And it turns out that it isn't just doing something. It's what do you have to know? You have to have a particular goal. You have to have an idea of how the system works. You have to know that there are certain supported positions that are helpful, seated positions, semi-supine, et cetera. It's not literally all positions. Then you have to know about kinesthetic awareness, like you said, the different mental skills that are involved, including what non-doing, you call it, just sort of like, there's different mental skills involved.
Yeah, but you're making a list, but we could simplify it and say, because you don't have to learn all that at once. You make a simple, if you just think, in order to restore the system, if something's wrong, you have to know, the first thing is you have to know how the body's designed to work. That will lead to a lot of the other elements. It will lead you to say, well, I need to be in a position that's supported. I need to stop doing my normal activities. That's non-doing. It's just be quiet, take time in that supported position, give muscles a chance to let go. And a lot of the other elements are incorporated into that simple, that simple process.
Okay. Yeah.
And then, of course, you gain more understanding as you go.
Yeah.
And then in a moment, we could talk about a little bit about the activity side and why this relates to becoming more mindful in activity or more conscious in activity, which is what makes this whole subject part of the larger subject of heightening awareness and becoming more conscious and mindful in general. We could talk about that in a moment. Because up till now, we're really speaking about something bodily. I mean, we're paying attention. That's not just physical. And we're being quiet. That's not just physical. We're maybe heightening our awareness. That's not, but still, we're doing it all to restore the body. So it's mostly seems to be about the body, but there's much more to it than that. Yeah. But I'm just seeing if there's anything else we wanted to cover before we get to that.
Is there?
No, maybe not. Maybe it's time to.
Could be time. You know, it's like a, like you said, it's such a foundational thing, this how the body is designed to work. Kinesthetic awareness in the context of supported positions, physically supported positions. You know?
Yeah.
And you're right. It's easy to think that that's about the body. You know, it could be like a meditative technique, kind of.
Yeah, I know.
It's like, but it's still kind of based on restoring the body,
right?
You know, so it's like maybe sophisticated body work or mentally sophisticated body work or personal body work or something. So what's the next thing? You know,
So you're sitting, you've learned how to restore this, you're quiet. You know what it means to have a supported position so muscles can let go in the context of how the body is really actually designed. And you say, oh, this is working better. I could tell that my muscles are lengthening. I could tell that my body is, the parts are working better together or coordinated properly. Mm-hmm. And then you say, well, okay, so now I can go back to what I'm doing, you know, sitting at a computer and typing away or singing or whatever I'm doing. Mm-hmm. And then you notice that the system deteriorates quite quickly back to where you were in the harmful state. So now you say, well, I see that I could restore my body to a better condition when I'm quiet. Mm-hmm. But the real problem is that when I go back to activity, I interfere again. So it's really the problem, in a sense, was never with my body. The body was the victim of whatever I was doing harmful.
Yeah.
Right? And the real problem is harmful activity. So now you say, well, I see. So now I've got to identify what goes wrong again when I go back into activity. And now you're talking about identifying something that's far from physical. It's really psychophysical, and learning how to gain mindful awareness in action. And now we're talking about, again, something like a martial art where you're learning to do something more consciously in activity, which you begin to bring into your daily activities. So now you say, well, whatever I'm doing, I could be more aware, more balanced, whether it's walking or sitting or speaking.
Whatever. Yeah.
And that's more more of a mental and physical process. Process of being aware of your activity. And so now your kinesthetic awareness is not just applied to restoring something that's gone wrong in the body, but is applied to becoming more conscious of what you're doing. And that's part of sensory motor awareness. That's part of the curriculum, is learning that.
Learning that.
It's a beautiful discipline. That's a discipline that goes toward becoming more conscious in your activities. And as you know, James, to my knowledge, that's never been articulated as part of what we normally speak of when we think of higher states of awareness or mindfulness. And not through any fault of any other disciplines, but because the contemplative disciplines tend to be aimed at something so difficult and higher states of awareness that they tend to not look at the simpler thing, the simpler problem of how we conduct ourselves. But if you're not aiming toward some higher state of awareness, but you just want to become more aware in your daily life, then there's something different that has to be learned in daily activity. That's what sensory motor awareness is specifically about, learning to be more aware in your daily activity.
Yeah. 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 And it's like, it's beautiful, and it's also like extraordinarily challenging. Just extraordinarily challenging. I mean, it's difficult enough to learn how to, say, get the system restored, like we were talking about in the first half. You know, that takes patience, it takes knowledge, it takes, a little bit of gumption, maybe even a little bit more patience than you think originally. And then, okay, but to study what you're doing, to get yourself there in the first place, you know, and like you said, the body's the victim of our habits. To study what you're doing in activity, that's like it's a whole nother level of patience and like mental fortitude, it seems like. At least for me, it is.
Well, of course it is. It's just me. Well, you're putting it as a challenge, but it's also just part of the reality that you're on a black, you're learning a series of black belts, and you're just describing, you know, the sixth or seventh or eighth degree rather than the third degree.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, when I learned about, when I got to know someone many years ago who was a very serious Aikido student, he was a fourth degree study with a very high level eighth degree teacher who was, I think at the time, the third most accomplished, you know, Aikido master in the world. And when he, at the fourth degree, he was beginning to get to that level where he was paying attention to himself very closely. Mm-hmm. And he was no longer practicing, you know, just an art of self-defense. He was practicing the art of awareness. It was as if that was his skill now. And his teacher apparently had, I only heard about his teacher. I never met his teacher. But his teacher was highly accomplished at that level. Mm. And I think it's something similar here, where at a certain point, you're learning how to be mindful in what you do at a level that, you know, if you described it from the point of view of a secondary black belt, it would be like, well, there's so much to learn here, but it's just a more accomplished and refined stage of the same process. Mm-hmm. The problem is that we don't articulate that. If you're just going to turn this subject into a method that a practitioner practices on a patient, you're not going to articulate that because you think you've just learned a skill and now you're using your knowledge to help people. But mm-hmm. there's the discipline, and the discipline is sensory motor awareness, is a longer term discipline. And people want to learn that. They want to go like you want to learn more about it.
Yeah. That's nicely put. The whole discipline is sensory motor awareness, you know?
Yeah, I gave it that name because I want it to be a discipline and a subject. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's just a method. I think it's a subject matter.
Yeah,
and we don't shy away from saying that about a martial art or about learning to sing. We shouldn't shy away from it when we speak about how we use the body as an instrument. Mm-hmm. I mean, what more beautiful instrument is there than the human body? It should be. We should learn to use it consciously, or if we want to, or we certainly should have that available to us as knowledge.
Yeah.
I don't think it's been available to us as knowledge.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, that's one reason I went to graduate school. So I thought this is a subject that should be part of what is taught in the field of education. And even after I graduated from education school, and when I went back to my education school, and spoke to I went to the graduate school at Harvard, and I spoke to the dean, who I'd gotten to know a little bit, and I said, can I teach a course? He said, well, perhaps not. Perhaps you could just teach professors who have back trouble. And I said, no dice, because right. That's not the subject. You can only think of what I did as something that was used to help people with physical problems. But I would say, no, the use of the human instrument is its own educational discipline. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I didn't at the time have the language I have now, and I hadn't articulated the curriculum. I hadn't articulated how the PNR system works. Now I have a more fleshed out, kind of subject and theory and curriculum. So maybe I could speak to him again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But, you know, that the point is that it's in its own right, it is an educational discipline.
Yeah. Yeah. And I know, you know, I can imagine people being confused at the story you just told, because, you know, like a lot of people would jump at that chance as a professional. You know, of course, you know, I would really love to help surgeons, for example, or doctors or like professors who have back trouble. And that's, I think, what a lot of people get into this discipline for. But right. it's a little bit like, you know, from your perspective, it's a little bit like saying to someone who's just gotten their PhD in physics, well, you know, you can't teach a class on this discipline. We don't really know what it's about, but maybe you can design pendulums for our clocks.
Exactly.
Because you're really good at oscillators. You know, right. You know the equations. Okay. But this is physics. Like, this is the study of the natural world using mathematics and using reason, you know, like, shouldn't we really know more about the world before we just try to apply it, you know, like even think that there's nothing behind it like this, you know? And I don't want to be a physicist. I think the subject is interesting, but I don't want to be a physicist, but it should be available as a field of study, and it should be available as, you know, I mean, because there are some people who would really like to take it to the nth degree, you know?
Yeah.
And it helps us all. You know?
Absolutely. And I wasn't willing to do it as a, just as a kind of, I don't know, what's the word, you know, a method for alleviating, you know, tension problems. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And same with, and then soon after that, when I declined to be in that, it's also like putting you in the role of being a service professional. It's not what I am. I'm a teacher. Mm-hmm. I studied a field and I wrote a dissertation on it, you know, but in addition to that, he then later said, well, maybe you'd want to be involved at the Mind Body Institute a Mind Body Institute at Harvard. But again, it was so oriented toward different methods for lowering stress that I declined. I said, no, that's not, again, that's not what I do. I wasn't willing to compromise the subject. But it's hard. I think in general, we don't have, you know, it makes me think of quotes people have said in the past. Like we expound on the principles of nature, but of our own nature, we're as ignorant as donkeys. You ever heard that? Is that Rumi?
It's something that I've heard from you, I think.
Yeah, we haven't recognized the human being, him or herself, as being a subject worthy of study in the way that we recognize the physical world as a subject worthy of study. Mm-hmm. And that's not entirely true, because we do have, you know, certain areas that delve into that I would describe as a kind of self-study, like psychotherapy, let's say, or psychology on the whole. Mm-hmm. You know, but when we look at the body through science, the biological sciences that look at the human being, that's not that's the study of the human being as an empirical subject of study, but it's not self-study. It's not studying, gaining knowledge about myself in my own behavior and conduct. That study is relatively non-existent.
Yeah.
I mean, at least in the Western can't, you know.
Yeah,
the Western.
Yeah. And, you know, even then, you know, you mentioned before contemplative disciplines, and in human history, they've been extraordinarily developed. Programs of self-study there. But even there, what you're saying is this, this is about applied to conduct. This is about the mind and as it relates to the body specifically. This is about how you do daily actions. Is that could draw that distinction even finer.
Yeah. Yeah. That subject is relatively unexplored. I mean, not entirely unexplored, but relatively. Certainly is more to be understood about it.
Yeah. Yeah, because I know that, you know, it would be easy for someone to say that what you're saying here is our subject has been studied elsewhere. You know, maybe Aikido people have already done it. I think some people have actually told that to you. Oh, yeah, you know, I study Aikido and I basically study what you study. Or it isn't like we're trying to be chauvinistic about this, or it isn't like we're saying that we're unique here. Like there is actually kind of an undiscovered country here, you know, to use F.M. Alexander's phrase that he got from Shakespeare. There is kind of an undiscovered country here.
Yeah. I think so. Right. Because I mean, when I was open to martial arts and I was open to, you know, Eastern and other contemplative knowledge. But when I had my back problem, there was something I don't think I was going to get anywhere until I saw that Alexander had observed his own activity and had made a discovery that I think was waiting to be made and was unique as far as I could see. Mm. As far as I know now, I still think of it as pretty unique. Yeah, and it's pretty new.
Yeah, yeah, you know, because it seems to be in the context of certain, or it seems to be in the context of certain type, like a certain type of culture or a certain type of society, of like super demanding complexity, you know?
Maybe that's it. Yeah. Maybe that's where it comes from. Yeah. And also he was an actor, and I think he had a specific, because he, as a vocalist, I think Alexander had a real concrete interest in a very specific problem, which was his throat and hoarseness. And I think because of that, and because of his own temperament, he was able to make a study that was unique.
Mm.
You know, the study of what he did when he vocalized. I think that was a very unusual perspective and a unusual level of persistence in being able to make the discovery. And
sure, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, this is really interesting topic. Really interesting. You know, the subject of sensory motor awareness, the fact that whatever this subject is called in the future as it matures, you've really put your foot in, you know, you've really stood in this. This is a subject on its own. We need to give it some kind of a name because it's not a technique. It's not some person's property. It really deserves to be, you know, it really deserves to take its place among human knowledge.
Yeah.
You know, it deserves to take its place among the things that we teach children, you know, among mathematics, among, you know, science, among music. Like, this is one of the things that should be available for children. And it's not about, you know, making a hands-on teacher available for children. This is actually one of the fields of study, you know?
Yeah, right. That, and it applies to child development. And I'm not sure if I've mentioned it on the podcast, but when I taught for 6 years at Teachers College at Columbia. And while I was there, I found one of my students who we know very well, Tara Fenimore. Mm-hmm. Who wanted to do, she had gotten a master's degree, and she was a very good candidate for doctoral study, had an interest in children, and she now has one of her advisors, she got a doctorate focused in applying this subject matter to young children, because that's where it needs to be applied, and it's an important area of application. We are going to have, at one point, we will have Dr. Fenimore on the show to discuss her work and ideas with children. So that's important.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
we're looking forward to that. She's busy, but we'll get her here one of these days. One more thing to say, just that if listeners are interested in learning more about the curriculum and the theory and practice of sensory motor awareness, it's in the book. The book contains, James has a copy. I think he's reaching. It is. It's in the book. There's the theory and practice. The theory is sort of outlined in the beginning and some of the topics that are involved in this subject. And then it goes through different areas of study that are part of sensory motor awareness. So people can learn more from the book.
Yeah. And for people who are listening who didn't see the video, it's you know, the book is called Sensory Motor Awareness, A Kinesthetic Guide to the Body in Action. It's available on Amazon. It's available from your local bookstore. Yeah. And I just want to remind people, as we're wrapping up here, if you like this podcast, if it helps, don't forget to like and subscribe on your favorite podcast platform.
Leave a rating.
Yeah, leave a rating. It definitely helps. It's one of those things that, you know, we find that it really does help. So, So next podcast, do you remember what we want to talk about next time?
Stress was a possible next topic.
Yeah.
Breathing is also following. So we could talk about one of those subjects. The subject of sensory motor awareness directly relates to breathing, because when you're speaking about the body and how it works in action, you're speaking about breathing, because breathing is dependent. Well, it isn't just a separate, you know, vegetative function in the body. It's dependent on the moving system.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a lot to say about that. So we could talk about breathing next week, or we could talk about the relation of this subject to stress, because stress is not just about, you know, removing yourselves from activity and then practicing a method to lower stress. Stress it also involves how the body works in a balanced way.
Mm-hmm.
Because stress lowers when the body is balanced, and how to maintain that inactivity. So We'll talk about one of those two topics next week, stress or breathing.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks again, Ted. I love having these conversations.
Thank you, James.
Thanks, everybody, for listening.
Thank you, everyone.
The Awareness Connection. Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye, everyone.